Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. You know, early this morning, I watched the news as I normally do, and I was appalled by something that was on the news, and something that actually some of my grandchildren saw, and I researched it today so that I could hopefully give them a happy ending. There was a baby born in China into a commode, and neighbors heard the baby crying in the pipes, and they researched and found a baby, a little boy. And they showed pictures on the television of them digging out this pipe and opening it up and finding this beautiful little 5-pound baby boy. Now, there is quite a bit of conjecture in regard to this. I'd like to read you a few excerpts, only because I want to make a point about this. Now, he has no name, just a number, baby 59. But his face is now familiar to millions of well-wishers across China, and people are anxiously monitoring the fate of this tiny newborn after firefighters freed him from a sewage pipe where he was trapped beneath a squat toilet. Weighing just 5 pounds, the boy was found wedged in the pipe beneath a shared bathroom in a residential building in Xinhua, in China's eastern province of Zhejiang. His placenta was still attached. Early reports suggested residents heard his cries late on Saturday and raised the alarms, but updates suggested his unmarried mother had been the first to call for help, pretending she had merely come across him. An extraordinary footage of his rescue showed firefighters sawing away an L-shaped section of the narrow pipe from the floor beneath the bathroom. After attempts to pull him out failed, medics at Pujang People's Hospital then helped them to take it apart piece by piece with pliers and saws, a process that took almost an hour. It reportedly had a diameter of just 10 centimeters. State media said the baby, identified only by the number of his hospital incubator, had a low heart rate when he was admitted and had suffered cuts and bruising, but was in now stable condition. Police initially said that they were looking for his parents and treating the case as one of attempted murder. But the Pujang Police Bureau later said on its official microblog account that the boy's mother had been located and an investigation was ongoing. An officer reached by phone told Associated Press he had no information. So an agent in France said a police officer told him that the mother had hidden her pregnancy and the baby fell into the toilet after she gave birth unexpectedly. The woman was on the scene during the entire rescue process and admitted she was the mother when we asked her. There were no charges filed against her, and the landlady said that it was unlikely because nobody there was pregnant. This case has provoked horror across China, where footage of the two-hour rescue was broadcast widely. State media and strangers inundated the hospitals with gifts of nappies, baby clothes, and milk powder, as well as offers to adopt the little boy. But a doctor at the hospital said he would be handed to social service if his parents did not claim him. Several cases of abandonment have been reported recently, including that of a baby dumped in rubbish earlier this month, who is thought to have died despite the medical care. Earlier this year in Beijing, Youth Daily said the hospital that treats abandoned babies found in the capital had received more than 10,000 in the last decade. Girls are more likely to be abandoned due to the preference for boys in China, as are disabled infants. While some of the suggested abandonments are linked to China's one-child policy of strict birth controls, which can lead to heavy fines for parents who breach the rules, that alone is unlikely to explain the phenomenon. Abortion is readily available and widely used to end unwanted pregnancies or those that breach the quota. I don't know about all of you, but this is, in today's advanced, first of all, protection, just so many things. I mean, I know this still happens all over the world, but this seems like in a place that people actually revere China. You read a lot of things about how smart their children are, how strict they are. Well, this is one of those side effects, I'm afraid. This is awful. In a lot of cases, apparently, they pretend to have just found these babies and turned them in. Also, bearing a baby outside of marriage still carries a major stigma in China. But there appeared to be little sympathy for the mother on social media, where users angrily ask how any parent could leave their child in those conditions, which is obviously a good question. And I'm sure most of us are saying the same things and feeling the same way. But it does kind of make you think about all those strict rules, all the things that we talk about on this show, all the things that you hear discussions on 60 Minutes and all those kind of shows where they bring in so many amazing people who have covered all kinds of news all over the world, and we discuss things like this. We discuss the fact that here in the United States, how many pregnancies of women who are possibly in trouble or ill or who have HIV, and just all the things that are going on in our world. And we all know there's many situations like this. And then, of course, there's the fact that there are still people having children who really didn't want children. And in my mind, there's nothing worse than that. But that exists as well. But it does kind of make you question the validity of making such strict rules, such as one child per family, to control their population, and I would imagine to control their money. It's expensive to raise a child today, and I would imagine that has something to do with it as well. I was heartbroken when I saw this today, and then when I read this story and the statistics, 10,000 babies. I mean, did you all hear that? 10,000. Let me go back to what the time period was on that. I have a tendency to block out things that make me feel kind of sick to my stomach, so I won't retain that information. Earlier this year, the Beijing Youth Daily said the hospital that treats abandoned babies found in the capital had received more than 10,000 in the last decade. That's 1,000 a year. Girls are more likely to be abandoned due to the preference for boys in China, as well as disabled infants being abandoned. So I reported this just because I think it's the kind of thing that we need to take into consideration. I think the more people know about what's going on in the world, the better decisions we make in our own lives. I was saddened to report this story, but I still think that it's something that that we all needed to understand what had occurred. I'm going to bring in Shelley. Hi, Miss Shelley.
Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
Yeah, I was having problems with my phone again. I couldn't even. I tried calling through the show for 4 minutes, and my phone wouldn't dial through.
Well, you know, on that note, I have some neighborhood friends that their little girl is AJ's friend, and they use a company, and they haven't had service in over a week. And
wow.
My cell phone also has been, I mean, the other day it kept saying no service no matter where I was. I traveled with it. I was home. I went outside in the yard. I held it up in the air. I put my antenna up, my Wi-Fi up, everything, and I couldn't get service. So, I'm hearing through the grapevine that there's all kinds of work being done with towers, but of course that makes me feel like the more towers there are, the more confusion they're going to create and the more problems we're going to have. So I know that it is a problem. That's why on the show I use a landline. And even a couple times during the history of our show, my landline and the computer have gone down. So, you know, who knows where we're headed. But
anyway,
did you hear the story that I talked about? Mm-hmm.
I only heard what you were talking about at the end, so I kind of surmised what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I heard something about the 10,000 babies, but I missed what you were talking about.
Okay, well, in China this morning, a woman gave birth into a toilet and flushed the baby down the toilet. And they're not sure what day she did it, but reports come in as early as Saturday for hearing crying in the walls. So they finally investigated and realized that there was a 5-pound baby boy lodged in the sewer pipes in this house. Firemen came in, broke in, and couldn't get him out in the very beginning. It took them, I think, 2 hours, it said, for several different people to use screwdrivers and pliers and what have you, because they couldn't obviously hammer on it or do anything that would damage the newborn any worse than had already happened. But he survived and is well, and there's pictures of him on the internet, and he's just absolutely beautiful. So the reason I wanted to let everybody know about that is because I'm sure you have heard these stories, although we've never talked about it on the show. China is often revered for their ability to have low crime rate and smart kids and all this kind of stuff that goes on over there. And there is a one-child quota per family. Are you aware of that?
I had heard it, but no, I mean, I didn't know it was a fact. I heard it more like as a rule.
Yeah, there is a one-child limit per family, and they believe that the 10,000 children that have been abandoned over the last 10 years is partially to blame for that quota. And just, I guess, very recently they found a baby that was alive when they found him in a garbage, not a bin, but I guess just a garbage pile or something. But he did not survive. So the reason I thought it was beneficial to share that with our listeners is because when we're talking about how to make sure our kids are brought up properly and the golden rule, as a for instance, and the other things that we talk about that are about respect and treating other people the way you want to be treated and all those kind of things, rules and regulations we've talked about many times are a part of life. Otherwise, we end up like Lord of the Flies, you know, where everybody just pretty much goes crazy and tries to kill each other. And we do have to have somebody helping us with the way we manage everything, from money, the banks, to everything. There has to be laws, and there has to be law-abiding people living there. But when you go too far the other way, like this, like telling people how many children they can have, as a for instance, this is the kind of tragedy that you end up with when you tell people how many kids they can have. I find this to be, well, when I first heard that, I never was sure that was true, like you just said. I've heard that said many times, but it was hard for me to believe that that could be true, and that a large group of people would say, oh, okay, no problem, we'll just have one kid. You know, I'd never really believed that it was true, and apparently it is
true.
I never
believed it was true either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's, again, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. There has to be a respect for life. You can't have laws that take away, first of all, personal freedom, personal choice. You know, there has to be responsibility among people. Obviously, you get these women who get pregnant over and over and over again, and they never, you know, and then they abandon their children, and you know, they're just like they're like puppy mills, you know, in human form.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so you have the converse problem with that, but you can't have laws to deal with that. You have to deal with the underlying reason. There's a reason why that woman keeps getting pregnant and has too many children for her to take care of. There's something else going
mm-hmm.
on in her life that probably can be dealt with to prevent her from constantly getting pregnant. But to have a family and tell them they can only have one child, that doesn't even make sense to me. First of all, that's not a good family dynamic, not to grow up with siblings. So I don't understand the one limit anyway. Even if it was something that was socially beneficial, let's just go there for a minute. One child in a family is not socially beneficial because you don't have sibling interaction. So
mm-hmm.
I don't understand the limitation to begin with. It makes no sense from a healthy standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right. And of course, like I said, that is that's a big part of it. But they're not taking those things into consideration. They're not thinking about the family dynamics. They're not thinking of balance. They're also stressing that they want boys instead of girls.
Right, I heard that. Wow.
Which is like, in my mind, is like, excuse me? You know? So, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things that are good about rules and a lot of things that, you know, that make a difference in our world. But I think black and white rules are just don't fit anybody, in my opinion, because the world isn't black and white.
Right. There are people that probably should only have one child, all right? But there are other people
that
have eight children, you know, that could have eight children and just have very well balanced and be able to handle it financially. But how do you legislate something like the number of kids somebody can have? I mean, I find that mind-boggling, and especially, like you said, because China is touted as being so smart and, you know, and having good values and things like that. It is a shocking statistic that they have this law.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it
really was. No, it's China on the whole.
Oh my goodness, I'm shocked. I did not know that.
Yep.
And I'm surprised that there's not more media coverage about that. To be honest with you.
Well.
That kind of
maybe there's a reason for that too, Shelley. I mean, you know, if they are powerful enough to tell all those millions of people that live in China, you can only have one child, and have them so scared that they would flush one down the toilet, or abandon them in a garbage pile, or I'm sure if they've had 1,000 a year for the last decade, there's many horrible scenarios that are out there in regard to the children, especially apparently girl children. Who knows what they're capable of saying, this is the way it's going to be and this is the way it is. It's hard for me to believe in this day and age. I had this discussion with my grandchildren the other night. We talked about, you know, who you become as an adult and who you end up taking orders from. And I said, at this point in time in your life, this is teenagers, I said, everybody's your boss. And I know that sucks, but that's the truth. Everybody's your boss. Your teachers are your bosses. The bus driver is your boss. Your mother, your father, your grandma, your uncles, your aunts, they're all your bosses. And I know that that's not a good feeling. I get that. But if they really do the things that are expected of them, the things that we talk about on this show, they should be your boss because you're not ready to be a boss, not even of yourself.
That's right.
So we talked about that at length the other night. And Austin says to me, Graham, who's your boss? And I said, nobody. And he said, well, that's not fair. And I said, why? I'm a very strong individual. Have I had people that were my boss because they signed my paycheck? Absolutely. But nobody tells me to do something I don't want to do. And that's who I expect all of you to be. Nobody can tell me to do something that I'm not comfortable with doing. Somebody can tell me, okay, Renee, I'm going to give you $200 a week for you to take charge of this situation or run this restaurant or take this garbage out, or I don't care what it is. They can tell me that, and they can tell me how they want me to do the job that they're paying me for.
Right.
But they can't tell me I have to do anything. I'm not talking about legalities either. I'm not talking about, yes, they can punish me if I drive drunk. Yes, they can punish me if I do something that's against the law. I mean, nobody should be able to tell you what to do once you are of age and have your wits about you and know what you're doing. You should know what to do. But when you're a kid,
right,
everybody tells you what to do. So I feel like the whole idea of raising a child is so that nobody has to tell them what to do, and you want to hope that they make the right decisions. But again, once they're so many years old, it's none of your business whether they do or not anymore, even when you're their parent. I know that firsthand. But when you live in an environment where people can, I mean, that's like, this makes me feel like, you know, there's another Hitler living someplace. You know, a major dictatorship, is that how China is run, on a dictatorship?
Yeah, but is this a religious sect, or is this China-wide? Because, I mean, are you telling me that there's no families in China that have more than one child? I find that... It's hard to believe.
I don't know, Shelley. What I read today was mostly about this child. I will continue to research this, but I've been told that before, that there was a one-child quota in China. And this story, of course, said it again tonight when I read bits and pieces of it. I read most of it, but it did say that there is a one-child quota, and that is one of the reasons they believe there's that many abandoned babies, is because there's a fine if you have a second child, or if you get pregnant a second time, there's a fine. So
I know,
it's scary,
still,
huh?
I mean, I don't care how scared you are. I'm having great difficulty wrapping my brain around taking a living, breathing baby. And really just, you know, the woman that flushed it, obviously it was alive if it was crying inside the pipe. I'm having a hard time with that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say this, and this was something that I'm aware of very firsthand. Many years ago, my sister her neighbor started in an apartment building that was all self-contained. You know, you walked in a hallway and went into this apartment and down another hallway to go into that apartment, one of those kind of buildings. And she heard her neighbor screaming for her and went in. And the neighbor was sitting on the commode, and she was giving birth to twins. And my sister helped her off the commode, and these two pretty much fully formed fetuses were in the toilet.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, my sister called 911 right away, and everybody came, and everybody took care of everything. The babies did not survive, because once they came out of the mother's womb and everything, they needed to start breathing. And even though a water birth is very acceptable today, you have to retrieve them right away and make sure that they're breathing. And I didn't see it. My sister was scarred for life by this, and has probably to this day still got a mental picture of it. But from everything she explained to me, no. She was in pain and went in and sat on the commode, and the babies were just born.
Oh, so she miscarried.
Yes. But they were, you know, it was very, pretty much, but it was very, they probably would have survived had she known that's what was going to happen, but it just happened so fast, and it was her first babies, and I know of several stories like this, but not on a toilet seat. So, but at any rate, the point I was going to make is Barbara had told me before, you know, that there was no way that the baby, because I said, well, aren't we lucky that the babies didn't go down the toilet? And she said they were too big to go down the toilet. They wouldn't have gone down the toilet. And I said, oh.
Wow.
So I've never forgotten that, but that was the first thing I thought of when I saw this. And this, we're talking about this, a picture, pictures of this baby in the pipe. We're on the TV this morning, and they're on the internet, and pictures of the baby now in an incubator in the hospital. And 5 pounds is a pretty good-sized little body, I mean, you know, in the scheme of things. And he's beautiful and fully formed and, you know, perfect, you know, toes and fingers and everything. So, and of course, there's all kinds of people now that want to adopt him, thank God. So his story hopefully will be a happy one. But it just made me think of when we talk about, you know, right and wrong and rules and following rules. And last night we talked about our freedom and the fact that we live in the United States of America, where we have many heroes that go and make sure that we stay free. That's really something we have to learn to appreciate on a much higher level. I think we don't realize, because we've all lived here for so long, and we're born into this, and we don't know the difference. You know, we don't know anything else but this. So like everything like that, you take it for granted. You believe that, what's the big deal? Everybody gets a house to live in, and everybody gets this. And we know that that's not true. We have our fair share of homeless people. We have our fair share of people who go without every day. And we talk about those things as well. But we still take this freedom and this opportunity for granted. And we need to be reminded every now and then that other people aren't. Go ahead, honey.
There's countries that if a woman gets raped, she's dishonored her family. How is that? You know, they will actually beat the woman to death if she gets raped, because that's considered dishonoring the family. So she basically gets victimized twice. So she gets raped and then she gets killed by her own family. I mean, that's ludicrous.
I know.
You know, some cultures have just really bizarre morality codes, and most of them are very chauvinistic. Most of them, the women are almost considered second class I don't even want to say second-class citizens. They're almost like second-class living organisms because they're not even classified as having the right to have rights. And, you know, women in this country don't realize how far we've come in this country and how different it is from other countries that a woman could literally become president and almost did.
That's right. Well, and will eventually. If you look today in some of your business magazines, I don't know what the I did know 10 years ago what the ratio was men to women as CEOs of really really big important companies, but it's got to be even closer to either being half and half or maybe in favor of women now as CEOs. So that's a sign of the times. And let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to take, you know, I've said this a million times and I'll say it again. I love all the men in my life. I love them all. But, and I like to be able to depend on them, too. I like every now and then thinking to myself, okay, Spike will take care of that and this will get done and I don't have to worry about it. I like that. But in the same token, and you know I feel this way too. I believe when God created man and woman, he made somebody who was virile and strong and shot from the hip and didn't give a lot of thought to anything except for fixing something that was broken in that instant and jumping up and taking care of it. And then he invented woman who was soft and warm and could give birth and could nurture and who could care for. So she took those two groups of assets and she wanted us to be a team to make that one perfect person or that one perfect unit, I guess is the better way to put it. Because all by ourselves, it's not about fulfilling us in our own hearts. It's about fulfilling us as a team. And a perfect team is a man and a woman. And let me say this, to keep all of my stories straight, because we all know that I am a bit of an activist for gay rights. I believe in making your own choices. And that's the same with two women or two men. Because you have a man that feels very feminine and can nurture and love just as good as any woman I've ever known in my life. And his other half is going to be the more virile one. So it happens no matter who it is. But the perfect match are those two things. And I believe that's what we're supposed to do. And that's... What?
Right. You know, the feminine and masculine attributes. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it can be two women together or two men together. But, yes, you couldn't even in a gay relationship, you're not going to get, you know, two very, very feminine partners, or in the same thing with the men. You're not going to get too virile. Because I've met some of these couples, and there is absolutely a feminine partner, and there's a more masculine partner, even when you're talking to men or to women.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is what balances us. You need that dynamic. And when you have that dynamic, and when you're respectful of each other, it's when you have a really remarkable relationship.
That's right. That's right. And that's the fulfillment. It's not the fulfillment that's supposed to make you happy with yourself. You young girls that are out there waiting for your Prince Charming. that was a story, girls. That was make-believe. That was a fairy tale about Prince Charming. Not that you can't feel that way about the man you love. But if you're sitting there waiting for him to ride up on a big white steed, wake up. So I'm going to leave this story. I think we've made our point, and I hope and I want to send out lots of good energy for this adorable little boy named 59 for the time being, because that's the number on his incubator, and I hope he finds a home that will love him and care for him, and that he never remembers any of this ever. And if he does,
right,
he knows how to deal with it. So we're going to end that story because I found this other network that I want to let our listeners know about. It's called the Social Care Network. and it's Insight for Social Workers and Social Care Professionals. But what I liked about it is it has a lot of stories, has a lot of true accounts from people that have been through certain things and came out the other side. And I know for me, if there's something I'm really struggling with and somebody tells me a success story about that struggle, it kind of, I don't know, gives me a boost.
Empowered you.
Yes, yes. So I read this story today, and of course the first thing I thought of was the three women. Of course, it's not as bad as what happened to these three women, but it is a story of survival, and it's called How One Survivor of Child Sexual Exploitation is Making a Difference.
Wow.
Linda Hartley was abused by an older man at age 17. 20 years later, she is training frontline staff to help today's victims. Linda Hartley was listening to the radio one day when she heard the story of a young girl who had been a victim of child sexual exploitation. She'd been a witness during a trial and couldn't leave her home. She still sounded very isolated, having come through it. The story and the feelings were all too familiar to Hartley, who was a victim herself 20 years previously. According to Barnado's, child sexual exploitation can range from seemingly consensual relationships or normal exchanges of sex for accommodation or gifts through to serious organized crime. Now, that's a really full paragraph. I'm going to say it again. According to Barnado's, which is a book that has all these facts, child sexual exploitation can range from seemingly consensual relationships. In other words, you think he's your boyfriend, he treats you like a girlfriend, or informal exchanges of sex for a place to live or presents, through to serious organized crime. While it is difficult to ascertain the full extent of the problem because it is largely a hidden crime, the number of children and young people using Barnado's 24 child sexual exploitation services increased by 22% in 2011 to 2012 by 1,452. So this lady, Linda Hartley, knew she wanted to help. She conducted some research and came across Northern Care, an organization dedicated to fighting child sexual exploitation. Northern Care has 11 homes which look after 55 girls, of whom approximately 60% have been victims. Hartley contacted Northern Care and offered her services. From next month, she will help train staff to spot the signs of and understand sexual exploitation. She'll be a guest speaker on a course designed for frontline practitioners who will work with young victims. Her story will give staff a firsthand account of how grooming can work and how victims can feel so dependent on perpetrators. Hartley was 17 years old when she started a relationship with Pasha, who was 20 years older than her. He was everything that she had dreamed of in a man. He was sophisticated, he was Persian, cosmopolitan, he was fantastic and a great guy, and very clever. I felt really safe with him, she remembers. Before long, however, he became more possessive, and Hartley, who had moved into a flat with him, felt isolated from her friends and her family. I was hooked. I was dependent, but something wasn't right. It was like my life was just off center. Every time I mentioned going to college, restarting my A-levels, it would create such an argument. Hartley was an attractive young woman and was spotted by model scouts. She started traveling abroad for work, but the situation at home deteriorated. Hartley remembers once she arrived outside the front door, she found herself locked out of the flat. On other occasions, Pasha turned up with a gun, asked detectives to follow her, threatened that she would end up in a wheelchair and that he would run her over. It got really nutty. It was nonstop, Hartley says. Hartley lived in fear until one day she found herself locked in the bathroom with a knife cutting her hand. I realized I had to get help. I had to do something. This wasn't me. Eventually, she managed to break the bond and cut Pasha out of her life. 20 years later, she has written a book and is open to sharing her experience with others. Something for which Julian Dale Hutchison, who oversees learning and development for Northern Care, is grateful. For our staff to hear it from the horse's mouth, for want of a different term, and to understand how that made her feel and how dependent she was on him will help them understand what's going on to a really long haul to get our children to exit from this process. There's nothing more powerful than someone who's lived it and breathed it, he said. Dale Hutchison plans to introduce her as a guest speaker on safeguarding courses because of her experience of emotional abuse. And now that Hartley has written her story, he is looking at ways to use it in group work. He wants young people to read her story so that they can see that there is a life at the end of the tunnel and that they can break the cycle of exploitation and believe they are worth something. Hartley, meanwhile, knows only too well the need for this kind of help. She remembers that nothing was available when she was going through her ordeal with Pasha. When you're 17, you're not making a choice. You don't have the knowledge. That's a very wise sentence. When you're 17,
wow,
you're not making a choice. You don't have the knowledge. I came from a very comfortable middle-class background, but as an adolescent, I was vulnerable. If you're at a time in your life when you're vulnerable, you're susceptible to all kinds of things. She adds, what's as big an issue is stopping the girl going back. The men are very clever. They know exactly what they're doing. I used to tell myself that I couldn't really trust people in authority. I imagine that happens to you very easily. That's what impressed me so much about all the care. These people are so dedicated and they understand what the issues are. They are unsung heroes. So this is very lay terms. She's explaining, I mean, at 17, you do think you know everything, right? You pretty much think you know everything. And she meets a wonderful guy who's got money, can, you know, put her in a beautiful home. In the beginning, he's not abusing her. You know,
right,
he's making her feel like he can be trusted because he cares about her. And then all of a sudden she realizes that he's, you know, kind of taken her away. Yeah, he's
right,
taken her away from her life and is keeping her like a pet. Like a pet in a cage.
Right.
And tells her, you know, all these things you've heard other women say, and we've read stories about you're not allowed to see your sister anymore, and no, I don't want you hanging out with those girls. They're a bad influence on you. We've heard stories like this before. But the point she's making, which I think is very wise, and if you're a young person and you're listening, even if you're not real young, and you're still confused about the choices that you've made, or maybe you're alone again, maybe not for the first time, and you're looking for somebody to connect with, I think you have to think about what somebody is offering you and how much somebody is going to allow you to be yourself. Because before you can be anything else, you have to be yourself. You have
right,
to be who you're supposed to be.
How old is she? I mean, how long ago did all this happen?
This was 20 years ago, so now she's 37.
Okay, all right, I missed that. All right, so she's 37
mm-hmm.
now.
And yeah, she was 17.
Is there a timeline as to how long this went on?
Yeah, now let me go back to that because it doesn't really tell you. I guess it doesn't give you a year count, but it's been several years since she's been away from him and gotten herself back on her feet. But
Wow.
How it starts was she's listening to a radio story and hears the story of a victim of child sexual exploitation. And the story made her remember everything that had happened to her. And and that's why she decided she needed to speak out and write about it. And, of course, these places, now some of the things that you find online, you have to understand, are sometimes from other countries even. And I'm judging by the words, flat. She couldn't get into the flat. And there was another word that she used. I have a suspicion that this might be, but it's all in English, but it could be in the UK or someplace like that.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's not something that you would generally say here, you know.
Right, right. So,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's also some references to a guardian network. It's called The Guardian, all lowercase numbers. And it apparently, let me see. Yeah, it's a paper, but it talks about a lot of these same kind of things, including, the baby in China saved from the sewer pipe is in it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a paper, and lots of stories in it about everything. So, but again, you know, I think it's nice when somebody moves on and past something and doesn't need anybody's help anymore, but decides that they'd like to help others because they realize that their story could make a difference for somebody else.
Well, of course, like you said, you know, if you go through some sort of a traumatic event in your life, you know, you had something violent happen to you, it could be anything. It could be an illness. It could be a crime that was perpetrated against you. It could be an accident. You know, there's so many different things that people experience in life that can damage them emotionally, that can traumatize them. And then here you hear of somebody else who has a story that's very close to yours, and they rose above it, and they survived, and they went on their life. And just hearing their story and hearing how they were able to, you know, to have the strength to get past it sometimes mm-hmm. gives other people the strength, because all of a sudden now they have somebody to identify with. They almost have like a role model to kind of guide them out along on their own path. Where, you know, without hearing that story, they might have just, you know, kept sinking lower and lower and feeling more and more hopeless, you know. Because I had a couple of moments like that where I had things happen to me and I felt very low, and I'm watching the TV and I hear this survival story about somebody else. And even though it wasn't exactly what I went through, it was something that was, you know, equally horrific. And here this person is talking about, you know, that they're a survivor, and they didn't feel like a victim, and it started altering my own attitude towards what had happened to me. It was actually very uplifting. I embraced what I was hearing, and it actually made me feel stronger. So mm-hmm. it is so important when people experience things to listen to what other people have gone through and actually look for survivor stories, because it can help put you in a better place. And if you're the person that's in a better place, share your story. There are so many people out there that are injured. You have no idea how you would help other people by sharing your positive story of how you got through something.
That's right. That's exactly right. And again, you know, we have a tendency to think that we're the only one that's ever gone through anything, especially if it was really traumatic. It's hard for us to believe that, you know, like if you listen to a new mom tell the story of giving birth, you'd think she was the first one that ever did it. You know, it always tickles me and it's always funny. But then I see that too, not everybody, because some people play down everything that happens to them, and those people, I suspect, suffer a little bit inside because they don't vocalize anything, and I'm not sure that's the best and most healthy thing for you to do either. But some people think that they're pretty sure they hurt their back, and nobody's back has ever hurt like theirs. Or they had, you know, they went through the messiest divorce in the whole world, and there just isn't anybody. I mean, I had a lady saying that to me one time, and I said, have you ever heard of Elizabeth Taylor? She looked at me real funny, and I said, you make it sound like you're the first one that ever went through a messy divorce, and she did it lots of times. She laughed
she did,
at me.
Yeah, she did it lots of times.
Yeah, and she laughed at me.
Oh,
and she says, you know what? She says, I know this is silly, isn't it? And I said, no, I get why people think, because it's happening to you. So it's always in a different, you know, it's in a different perception. But it always does tickle me. I had a long conversation with my son, Michael, tonight. And we talked about when you're having trouble getting along with somebody that you love, and but it seems like everything you say to each other sounds kind of mean by somebody who's standing close by. So I said to him, I said, you know, something very interesting that I've learned while doing the radio show, I may have known it before, but I never verbalized it, and that is the fact that if you're feeling bad enough to be angry towards somebody you really care about, chances are you feel like you're the victim. And when you're being mean to the other person, they're in victim mode. So when they fight back with you, they feel like they're just protecting themselves. And I realize this sounds like a vicious, vicious circle, but think about it, Shell. I mean, if you're fighting with somebody that you know you care about deeply, well, if I won't embarrass you, can I bring up your mom?
Will I embarrass you if I mean, just
the fact that you love her so much, and yet sometimes she drives you to distraction. So the two of you will fight, and you'll say things to each other. You make her feel like, you know, you're being mean and she's the victim. And then when she comes back at you because she's finding fault in something that you've done for her or haven't done for her, then you feel like a victim. And you know how many people that happens between? Millions.
Mm-hmm.
Couples, siblings, friends. It happens amongst all of us, but it seems to happen the most with the people that we care the most about.
That's right.
And I had this discussion with my son, Michael, tonight, and I said to him, I said, you know, when somebody snaps back at you, it's because you've put them in victim mode. And he said, I don't even know what that means, Mom. And I said, well, it means you've somehow hurt their feelings, so they're striking back.
Right.
And I don't think we know we do that, Shelley. Do you think we'd, I mean, we wouldn't do it purposely, I don't think. So I think it's like something that just kicks in.
Right.
What
well,
do you think? I mean, why do you think you do that?
A little bit, it just comes back to being a little bit more self-aware of how we present our case, so to speak. Most times, most people are kind of careless. When they feel that they're trying to make a point or they're trying to get their way or something, instead of standing in the middle and trying to see the bigger picture, they're just trying to make their point.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're thinking from their point of view. If more people try to have a what I call a panoramic view, where they kind of embrace both sides of the issue simultaneously, they would find that it would be easier to get through these conversations, because if you at least show the other person respect enough that you're seeing their point of view, a lot of times that's enough to have a calmer conversation, and sometimes you can get to that compromise point. But if you're being so hard-headed in one direction and they're being hard-headed in the other direction, it's a near impossibility that either side is ever going to move, because they start feeling almost righteous. They start feeling justified.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
When you get to that point, then you're not going to move off you're not going to move off of point one. You're just going to stay there and dig your heels in, you know?
Mm-hmm,
but if you
mm-hmm.
can give someone a little bit of comfort and say, look, I see where you're coming from, but I really think this is a better way. Just give it a look. You know, And if you reason with somebody more calmly, chances are they'll at least engage and listen to the ideas. They still might not, you know, might not go totally your way, and that sometimes where interesting compromises can come up. But yeah, but a lot of times people, like you said, they don't even realize they're hurting the other individual because they're so focused on their stance, they're not paying attention to how they're being received or how they're projecting themselves. Because
well,
then
what else aren't they doing, honey? What else aren't they doing when they get to that point? What else aren't they doing? Amen. That's exactly what they're not doing. And we're all guilty of that to some extent. If we feel that we are, like you just said, righteous, that's a really important word. Righteous means you're almost dead on positive that you're right and they're wrong. So you almost quit listening because you're so sure that you're right. And we've talked about that so many times on this show, because having worked most of my life in the service industry and the customer's always right, and listen to somebody say something to me that I'm having trouble dealing with, and knowing that I've got to somehow gracefully make amends without giving away the farm, without, you know, actually saying you're absolutely right, we're a bunch of horses patoots and we don't know what we're doing. You don't want to do that. So there has to be a way to talk to somebody and do that. And I realized at a pretty young age that when you're having an argument like that with somebody, they seldom are really listening to you. So that is one of the shortcomings of having a discussion like that with somebody you love as well. Because like you just said, you know, you start feeling righteous. And when you start feeling too righteous, you quit listening. So I do think, though, in a world of, I don't know, opportunities to look up things and to find things out and to enlighten yourself about certain things, a lot of us could be a lot wiser about how we deal with each other. We're all really different, but at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. So, and I that's why I love Izzy. That's really why I love Izzy, because his way is showing people that you can actually melt somebody, not stop them on a dime, melt them on a dime by being kinder to them, you know.
That's right.
But by letting them know that, you know, you feel like you're doing the right thing, you know, so they look at you and they say, you know, I'm really sorry that you're, you know, that you're that upset with me, because I really thought this was okay for me to do, and I think you can trust me. And all the things that he said in the role playing that he and I did, I just thought it was perfect. And maybe that's something that we all just need to work on a little bit and try to do more often. I think we do it with strangers, but that those couple people that are in our lives that we feel so close to and care so much about, and we know that they eventually forgive us, we have a tendency to be a little tougher on them than on others. So, I am going to do a little research, though, about China, and I'll keep everybody posted on that. And,
I
am too. I'm interested now in knowing more about that. And I want to make sure that everybody knows that was the Social Care Network. And it's really set up for professionals, but I think in parts of our lives, we all do a little social work every day. So it might be a site that you'd be interested to look at and maybe get some pointers on how to deal with some of the loved ones in your lives. So another night, and we will see everybody tomorrow night. So thank you, Ms. Shelley. Went very nicely today with Adabelle. I wanted to let you know that. And
wonderful.
I will keep you posted on that. She's coming to my house tomorrow. So I will keep you posted on all of that. So from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Good night, Shelley. Thank you, sweetie.
Good night. Thank you too, Reen. You're doing I just love the show. Good night, everyone.
Me too. Good night, honey.
Bye.